The world of cryptocurrency and payment systems is changing rapidly, and it can sometimes kind of feel a little bit overwhelming for a regular person who is trying to understand what all these terms mean and, quite frankly, why they matter. So in this episode of My Money, My Lifestyle, I thought it was time to unpack some of these concepts and specifically stable coins, because I received a press release from Supermoney South Africa announcing a new stablecoin purpose-built for South Africa and the wider African market. ZAR Supercoin combines the speed and accessibility of blockchain technology with the trust and oversight of regulated finances. And I thought, well, let's get back to basics and actually understand what a stablecoin is, and then why would anyone be interested in a ZAR Supercoin? So joining me is Warren Ross, Managing Director of Supermoney South Africa. So welcome, Warren. I'm going to put you on the spot. Your job today is to explain to all of us in very simple terms what on earth a stablecoin is. So I'm going to start off with that specific question. I think we all know what a Bitcoin is, but maybe we need to understand cryptocurrency and then stablecoins.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Maya. Pleasure to be here. It's all like same sort of questions I had on my journey in understanding this world of cryptocurrency, blockchain technology, etc., and all these new acronyms and fancy words. And ultimately, once you cut through a lot of the acronyms, a lot of these concepts are quite simple. So it's going to be a pleasure to take you through them this morning. So what is a stablecoin? Quite simply put, a stablecoin is a programmable digital currency. It's a token that lives on a blockchain. And unlike Bitcoin, a stablecoin's value is pegged to something else. So there's no fluctuating value in a stablecoin. Bitcoin, the price goes up and down. As you know, historically, it has been quite volatile. That's based on supply, demand, buy, sell, etc. But a stablecoin is typically pegged to something else. And in the case of the ZAR Supercoin, it's pegged to the South African rand. So the value of one ZAR Supercoin is always, at all times, equal to one South African rand. Now, internationally, there are a couple of major stable coins that are out there. Probably the most well-known is going to be USDT, which is Tether, or USDC, which is Circle. Those are linked to the US dollar. And typically, that stable coin is always pegged and equal in value to one US dollar.
Yeah, I want to unpack a little bit about how that peg works, because that's quite key. How do we make sure that the currency or the token remains the same value? Because, of course, the reason that Bitcoin's so volatile is because it's not primarily used as a currency, right? It's actually used as a store of value or a speculation tool, where this is to help payment systems. And I think this is the big difference for me that we need to try and understand a little bit here. And Warren, am I correct? If I could use this analogy, I was thinking if I went into a casino and I had a $100 chip, $100 rand, it's called Stan Rands. So I go to Sun City and I want to play the roulette table and I get given chips. And that 100 rand chip, I can put on the table, I can give to somebody else to play. That we've all agreed that 100 rand chip will remain 100 rand, and I can play with it, I can bet with it, I can give it to people. But when whoever lands up with it at the end of the day goes back to the casino to cash it in, they know they'll get back 100 rand. Is that a kind of similar analogy? I mean, could you use an analogy like that?
Absolutely spot on. And key to that analogy is the fact that when that 100 rand chip was originally handed out, that very first person gave the casino 100 rand in cash. The casino put it away in what they can call a reserve. So you know at all times that if every single chip holder on the casino floor came forward and went to the cashier and gave their chips in, you know that the casino's actually got the cash in reserve to back up whatever chips are in circulation. And it's exactly the same concept with the stablecoin. We're obligated to make sure that we've got a reserve held in cash equal to, at all times, at least a minimum of all of the tokens in circulation. Exactly the same like the casino cashier would have for all of the casino chips in circulation on the floor.
And you mentioned USDC and USDT. They use different, I think it's USDC uses the US dollar and some treasuries. I think the Tether's is a slightly different. It's got some commercial paper in there as well. What are you doing to ensure that you have, the backing, basically?
Absolutely. So initially, we purely putting cash away in a reserve account that is being held by APSA. So we're not kind of using other money market accounts or anything of that type in the beginning, because we realize that this thing has to remain highly liquid. We have to be able to honor any redemption that comes forward. And in order to do that, you actually have to have cash on hand. It's got to be instantly redeemable. So, initially we're going to have it purely in cash. Once it starts to mature and we understand the amount of, call it, daily movement or liquidity that's required, that's when you can start to maybe diversify slightly with other sort of instruments, money market accounts, low risk instruments that can maybe produce maybe a slightly higher yield. But certainly in the beginning, it's purely held in cash.
So first of all, there's a lot of trust that has to be there. We have to trust that you, remember, these are quite largely unregulated products, right? How do we know? And I think if I look at Tether and USDC, they have built trust over time. And I think they are audited as well. Well, I think certainly the USD coin is audited. How do we trust that you actually have the money there?
Absolutely. So trust is critical. It underpins the entire thing, and so is transparency. So we're going to be publishing an audited reserve, proof of reserves. It's going to happen initially on a monthly basis from an independent company called Moore Consultants that will independently verify that we have sufficient reserves in place to back up all of the tokens or the ZAR super coins in circulation. So they will do this completely independently. This will be published on a monthly basis by Moore, published on our website and available for full public viewing. In addition, given that it is the blockchain, anyone, and these are public records, anybody can go onto the blockchain and have a look at the tokens in circulation. It's all publicly available, and we're happy to make anything available publicly because, like you said, trust underpins this, and trust is built through transparency.
And what about possible arbitrage? Could somebody decide that actually the ZAR supercoin is something that they want, they think could be a value in the future, and they perhaps increase the value or decrease the value? How does that work?
That's ultimately what we call the market maker's job, is to make sure that the peg is stable. So the market maker will go into the market and make sure that the bid price or the off, and the buy price never drops, because they can fulfill, they've got sufficient liquidity, so enough available to fulfill any order, so that price doesn't drop below 1 rand. And by the same token, on the sell side, they'll never allow it to drop below that if there's too much sell because of the liquidity in the market. So that's very much a function of the market maker and the exchange's job to make sure that this thing never depegs. And when you've got the reserves that are there substantiating the value of this token, that will naturally make sure that it doesn't depeg.
So, who is your market maker in this particular case?
In this case, it's being done by Luno themselves, but there are a number of independent market makers. So as the ZAR supercoin becomes available elsewhere and we start to, list it on international exchanges, there are a number of different market makers out there that will fulfill that function for us. It's
I want
common
to.
practice.
Yeah, I want to come back to how money is made out of this by someone like, super money, or how is money actually made? But I want to go maybe take, before I go there, what is the use case for this? So what is the point of creating a ZAR supercoin?
Sure. So by its nature, cryptocurrency and blockchain has a major advantage in that the costs are significantly lower to transact on there. If you look at current costs with, let's call it, a bank account, and anybody that wants to transact, you want to send your friend, you want to pay them back for dinner, you're paying a couple of rand to do the transaction. You want to buy airtime and data, you're paying a few rand. You've got a monthly fee on the bank, on the bank account that you hold. Blockchain doesn't have a, like, the costs to transact on a blockchain are absolutely minimal. So in order to unlock those benefits for the consumers, that's where this technology comes in. When you can create a stablecoin and give a stablecoin use to the day-to-day, the day-to-day consumer, the man in the street, all of a sudden you're unlocking those cost savings that you can then pass on to that consumer so that they're no longer having to pay to transact and to use their money ultimately.
So basically, it's to kind of bypass banking fees and the costs of banking, effectively. Or not so much banking, I suppose, but transactional costs.
as well as speed of transacting, Maya. So, this stuff happens in an instant. You're not having to send it through a central clearinghouse, bank to bank, taking 24 hours to clear. This happens in a matter of seconds. It's all done on a public blockchain. The speed of transacting and the cost of transacting are the two major benefits of this technology.
So I kind of, obviously the US pegged stable coins, very wide use case there, especially for international payments. And I mean, I was speaking to Yellow Card recently, and they've got 30 large South African multinationals that use it. They use their platform to make settle payments in stable coins because they may be dealing with from South Africa to Kenya to America to wherever. And once everyone agrees that that is a, that represents a dollar, and the exchange rate relative to their own currencies is something else that they sort out. But they don't have these incredible forex costs, which I think is just eye-watering for most of us. So I completely get it for cross-border. I think for cross-border, it seems to be a solution that's got huge potential. But the SAR, I mean, really is a cross-border payment, or are you seeing this more as an internal payment? How are you seeing this
So
develop?
a bit of both. What we've seen is that there are a lot of people out there at some point in time do want to reduce their exposure to a dollar stablecoin. Dollar weakness, rand strength, etc. So those people don't necessarily want to come back into actual fiat currency of rands, cash in a bank account, because the difficulty to go from rands back into cryptocurrencies. It's quite costly and it's quite difficult to get back in it. So what we're finding is that there's a lot of demand for people to go into a rand stablecoin, hold it in rands to de-risk themselves from a dollar or de-risk themselves from the risk of fluctuation in Bitcoin as an example. But what it gives them is speed and flexibility to enter back into any other of these cryptocurrencies or stablecoins when they feel the time is right. So it made sense for us in that case to launch a ZAR stablecoin. We also believe that people live their lives in local currency. Local people need local currency at the end of the day. And there's always going to be a demand for the US dollar. The US dollar is the global currency, right? It's always there used for cross-border payments, remittances. But local currencies haven't disappeared and they're not going to disappear. And that's why we believe that it makes sense to launch a family of local currency stablecoins in Africa to play the other side of the dollar. And there's always going to be a demand for that.
I actually see that you're going to be starting this on Luno as a platform. Now, given what you've just explained, is this a way for people who may have Bitcoin or other, other cryptocurrencies sitting in their Luno account, but they now want to make a payment to somebody, they actually want to use it? And could they then use the ZAR Supercoin as the payment method so they can swap from their Bitcoin into the ZAR Supercoin and then start to use that as their payment mechanism?
Yes, absolutely. So the ZAR Supercoin can be used as part of the Luno Pay product. So that's where a customer will go. They'll scan a QR code to pay. They select the ZAR Supercoin and it pays on a one to equivalent of whatever rands are being paid. So yes, absolutely they could.
But now, I suppose the other part is that this has to have adoption, right? Because if I come and I say to somebody, I'm going to pay you 100 rand, they know what I'm talking about, right? And they've got a bank account and I can transfer it to them. How many people are you going to need who actually knows what a ZAR Supercoin is before it becomes a point that I can actually use it effectively to make payments?
Yeah, you're spot on. I mean, it's all about adoption at the end of the day here. And what we believe, in order to drive that adoption, you have to create utility for the stablecoin. As in, it's got to be useful for you. You've got to be able to do stuff with it. So what you'll see coming out in the first quarter of we launching a digital wallet called the Supercoin Wallet. And in this wallet, it's basically where your Supercoin are going to live. And you're going to be able to spend it. You're going to be able to do peer-to-peer transfers. You're going to be able to scan a QR code and pay. You're going to be able to withdraw cash from an ATM. You'll be able to buy airtime, data, bus tickets, etc. There's going to be a virtual MasterCard that is in the wallet. So you can add the virtual card to your Apple Pay or Google Pay wallet. You can then tap that card at any POS device, globally, and you're spending your Supercoin. You're spending those stable coins. So now you're creating the ecosystem that the stable coin can live in. You're creating utility. And once you've got that utility in there, it becomes useful. And when it becomes useful, that ultimately drives the adoption.
I want to get through some of the tech because in your press release, I read the sentence and I thought, I have no idea what you were talking about. Now, keep in mind, I'm not a blockchain expert. So I thought it'd be really worth just for you to unpack this so that people listening who like me are not blockchain experts understand what this actually means. So in the press release, you had SAR Supercoin will be deployed on the Solana blockchain using the Fireblocks tokenization engine to mint, burn, and manage the entire smart contract lifecycle with Fireblocks wallet infrastructure ensuring secure custody and storage of the stablecoin. Chainalysis Sentinel will monitor the Xar Supercoin ecosystem for compliance, helping SuperMoney SA maintain robust risk policies and a safe environment for users. So let's break this down. Let's explain Solana blockchain first.
Yes. So all of these cryptocurrency or these crypto tokens have to live on a public ledger. Okay. And that public ledger is called a blockchain. Now, what happens in a blockchain is there are multiple blocks and multiple computers in this blockchain that all resolve the cryptographic encryption on this in order to confirm a transaction. So basically what that means is there's multiple people in this that confirm a particular transaction. And once it's confirmed, it's immutable. It's publicly available. Everybody's confirmed it, and it can't change after that point. Now, there are a number of different blockchains out there that support these different tokens. The most well-known one, as you mentioned, is Bitcoin. Bitcoin lives on the Bitcoin blockchain. Ethereum lives on the Ethereum blockchain. And so forth. And there's one called Solana as well. Each of these have different pros and cons and different, call it, ways of confirming the transactions on them. They've got different speeds, they've got different technologies, they've got different ways of doing it that ultimately drives use case on their particular blockchain. So it's simply just the name of the blockchain, the public ledger on which, the stablecoin lives.
Right, Fireblocks tokenization engine to mint,
Yes.
burn, and manage. Explain
Okay,
that.
let me break this down because, like I said to you, this was all part of my journey and understanding the space, and I found the easiest way was to try and relate it to something we all knew. Okay, so the best analogy I've got for Fireblocks is to the blockchain, is what Windows is to the PC. So just like you need to use Windows in order to unlock the power of a computer and start to do stuff like run applications, Word, email, PowerPoint, etc., you've then got this piece of software called Fireblocks that basically sits on top of that blockchain and allows you to unlock the power of the blockchain. So they have a piece of software that allows you to deploy smart contracts. What are smart contracts? Those are basically, it's the programmable instruction that governs how you deploy these tokens onto a blockchain. Again, publicly available, but it's through an interface. You and I would never be able to open up an email in code. We need Outlook or Gmail or a browser to do it. The same way we need Fireblocks in order to deploy these things, onto a blockchain. Fireblocks is also, call it, the custody layer that holds the wallets or creates the wallets that can hold these coins on a blockchain. So it's institutional grade stuff. It's the best piece of software out there that allows you to basically deploy onto a blockchain.
And the smart contract, I've always been trying to explain also to people what a smart contract is. And I liked the way you used Windows. And I was thinking that, how you can program your email, keep certain rules in place automatically for you. Would that be a good analogy?
Yes, to a degree. It basically governs the rules around the token. So just like an email where, yes, one of those is an automatic response, if you had to think of a smart contract for an email, it would mandate that you have to have a sender address, you have to have a to address, you have to have a subject, and then you've got space for a body. Whereas an instant message would be slightly different. It wouldn't need those requirements. So the smart contract basically governs how this token lives in the world. What are the rules around this thing? Who can create it? Who can destroy it or burn it? What are the permissions? How does it move? Can it move wallet to wallet? Is it allowed to? At what, at what volume, etc., etc. So it basically governs the attributes of this item that is being created. And again, it's all publicly available. So the creator has to publish the smart contract, and then anybody can go and view the smart contract to see the attributes that are associated with the token that they've created.
Right, so this is a really important that this information is so publicly available, because you and I can have an agreement and there's this contract that's sitting in a drawer somewhere, and then when we want to argue about it, we've got to get it out, we've got to speak to a lawyer, we've got to go to a judge. This is all built into the system. It's clearly visible. Everybody knows exactly what's going on in that contract. Now, Chainalysis, I know them quite well, simply because they get involved when crypto has been stolen or frauds happened. But maybe just explain to the listeners exactly why
Sure.
they are important in your yeah, on your platform.
Sure. I mean, Chainalysis is a great tool. I think to maybe give a bit of context as to why it's important, and then I'll explain exactly what it does. It's important because, like you said, crypto has kind of got a bad rep over the years as being, got completely anonymous, untraceable, and actually used by bad actors out there in the world, right? And I think it's a bit of an unfair rep that crypto has got. Yes, in the beginning days, etc., it was quite anonymized. And it was sort of easier to use than call it traditional finance routes. But what's happened in the last few years is pieces of software like Chainalysis have come around. And what they basically do is they allow you to do full transaction screening and transaction monitoring on your token, as well as wallet screening of the wallets that your token is moving around. So said quite simply, it basically helps you de-anonymize the blockchain per se. And while it won't give me specifics to say that this particular wallet address belongs to Maya, it will tell me that this particular wallet, that is wallet address whatever, might be associated with another wallet that's linked to North Korea or terrorist financing or money laundering, etc., and has been flagged. And it traces every other transaction because this is all publicly available in the blockchain. So any other wallet that that particular wallet has done business with, it will give it a risk rating. So through Chainalysis, we're actually able to set up a bunch of rules that's as Supermoney and as the Xar Supercoin, what are we prepared to accept from a risk perspective? If it's we won't do business, and this is very much the case with any wallet that's linked to terrorist financing, has been blacklisted internationally, is within one, two, three hops of a wallet that has done that. What it does is it then holds any transaction associated with that wallet for screening or outright rejects it, so that you ensure that your particular token cannot be associated with any blockchain wallet that is, in any way, shape, or form suspicious.
Yeah, I must say when I speak to the banks, they're not convinced at all yet. By the
Naturally,
they still feel it's quite anonymous, and it is still very easy to hide funds through using cryptos, through crypto wallets. I think there's also something called a tumbler where money can all be paid into a single onto a single platform, and it all gets mixed up and repaid out. And there's just so much still in the space that I think people are struggling to control. So yes, I think there's going to be a huge concern. And I, as I said to you, that one of my probably the thing that flagged me a little bit is Supermoney is owned by Supergroup, which owns Betways, which again, and I think you and I have had an off the record conversation around the concerns of banks of how betting platforms are being used for money laundering as well. So I think there's going to be a lot of questions around the money laundering side and the fraud side, and how are you going to be managing that?
Absolutely. And rightly so. It's a huge consideration for us too. As call it Supermoney, we're an accountable institution under the FIC, and we've got certain obligations to fulfill given that we've got a CASP license to ensure that we don't, do business with any wallet associated with this. So whilst it has the possibility of being anonymized and used for this, we're able to set up our rules of who we're prepared to accept money from, who we're prepared to send, which wallets, etc., to make sure that if we don't have KYC on them, we won't allow the transactions to go through. It's not just this completely open season and your token can go anywhere, etc. So it's not the wild, wild west. We do have a number of obligations to fulfill from a AML rules and regulations, best practice perspective as an accountable institution. And it's very much the same regulations that a Luno as a, you know, as a listed exchange, a Vela, et cetera, all these, call it players in this ecosystem that are regulated. We're all subject to these regulations, and we've got to make sure that the way we deploy this technology is according to the international best practices, using tools like Chainalysis in order to and fulfill our KYC obligations in order to mitigate the very risk that you know that you've just mentioned.
Do you have any examples, other than US linked stable coins, that are being used within the African continent quite successfully?
Not in Africa, but in another emerging market that had a very, very successful launch of a stablecoin is Brazil. And you know, if you look at the volumes that the Brazilian real, the BRL1, it's called, is doing, and they only launched approximately 10 or 12 months ago. It's unbelievable the adoption that has happened with the Brazilian real stable, you know, in such a short time. So, you know, it's a similar market to ours, given it's an emerging market, you know, similar sort of characteristics to what we see. And, you know, off the back of that, it certainly tells us that there's demand for a local currency stable.
I must say, Brazil always comes up when you're talking about innovation and technology. I mean, they have some of the most incredible payments, even buy now, pay later, which of course the big bugbear for some of the lenders in South Africa. I mean, that is just, I think it's just absolutely overtaken in Brazil. So the Brazilians seem to be very quick at adopting new technologies. Of course, one can also, again, unfortunately, with it, and I have been at the financial crime symposiums, they flag Brazil, of course, a lot for financial crime problems as well. So, all of these, anytime we make anything quicker and easier and seamless, we introduce the opportunity for more fraud. I think that's going to continuously be the balance that as South African regulators, they're also going to have to be aware of. And I just wanted to end off by saying, what is really interesting to me is how progressive our South African regulators are in regulating crypto platforms. So I imagine this is, it's part of the you are regulated because we actually have the environment in South Africa to regulate it. So yeah, and I that is, I think, hats off to the South African authorities, but at the same time, I think we all have to be quite aware of the risks that it introduces as well.
Yeah, correct. I agree with you. It's refreshing to see, you know, the levels of regulation that is very much in line with, call it, European and international best standards. Of course, the US is leading the charge, you know, through the recently introduced the Genius Act, which ultimately talks to how they're looking to sort of regulate stablecoins and stablecoin usage. And my sort of personal belief is that's going to be almost the guide that a lot of regulators are going to ultimately follow. If you look at the way we've deployed the Czar Supercoin, it's very much been aligned with what has been mentioned in the Genius Act, because you know we believe that's what's going to be coming down the pipeline. Best to get it in now at the start and you know add that type of credibility to your coin. So, of course, new technology, but I don't think the call it the, you know, the risks that you mentioned should scare anybody away. I think the benefits far outweigh those risks. And if you've got responsible players in the ecosystem that are well regulated, that are responsible in the way they go, and they do it according to international best practices, ultimately all of those risks are well mitigated with the tools that are available.
And Warren, I've just remembered, I didn't come back to my question about how is money made? So we're saying the transaction costs are lower, but I'm sure there's a little bit of money being made by the market makers, by yourselves, so how, where is the opportunity for money to be made by the platforms and the blockchain and all of that? Where is the actual financial
Sure.
value to
If you
creating
look at a
one?
business, you know, you look at a business like Tether, the majority of the value that's created for them is through the yield that they earn on the treasuries and the cash and all of that that they're holding while their tokens are in circulation. So that would be the primary, call it, revenue stream for a business like this. In addition to that, there's of course, you know, the little bit of transactional fees that they're able to charge. You know, the fact that people are accepting it as a tender type means, you know, there's some, call it, merchant commissions that can be charged, et cetera. But primarily, it's out of managing the yield that you can generate off, call it, the reserves that you're holding to back the value of the tokens in circulation.
So I suppose to sum it up, the person using the token forfeits interest. So if I'm sitting with money in my bank account earning interest, that's what I'm forfeiting if I'm using the stable coin and you're
Yes,
benefiting from that
but
interest.
a lot of stable coins do have other mechanisms of paying what you can call yield or interest on it, right? So you can stake the coin. When you stake it, you're basically able to earn that yield, earn a share of the yield that it's in, which is the equivalent of interest. In our case, our strategy is really to share that yield a bit differently, not in the pure interest payments, but in additional value that you're going to be able to generate out of using the XAR stable coin. So stuff like get extra value on airtime purchases as a prime example. In a way, you're paying back the interest through the use of the stable coin. So it's a slightly different way of doing it, but in essence, it's participating in that yield.
Well, I'm definitely going to swing back to you when you've introduced the retail version, I suppose, for want of a better, when you introduce the wallet. And I'm going to do a proper comparison. I'm going to say, is it, given my bank account fees, given what, how I make payments, would it make sense for me to open up your wallet?
Looking forward to
Yeah, great.
my hoping to see you
Awesome.
as my customer number one.
Well, it's been really great chatting to you, and thanks for simplifying all of this and speaking to us in English. I appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.